I'm at Tufts Medical Center, and today I'm going to talk to you about our randomized controlled trial of computer attention training in schools for children with ADHD. So like this Dr. Eggleston, Brandon, we also work in schools, and that presents different challenges, but also has a lot of opportunities to involve all sorts of students because everyone goes to school. So it's a pretty neat area. So I have no relevant financial interests to disclose or conflicts of interest to resolve. So the goals of our study are to assess the efficacy of two computer-based attention training systems. One is a neurofeedback-based program, and the other is a cognitive training program. And ultimately, we want to help children with ADHD be able to attend more effectively, which we think will help them be able to be more successful in school. So computer attention training as a whole. The software reinforces desirable behaviors via auditory and visual feedback. Some advantages of computers: kids think they're cool, so that's always good. We have that buy-in. There's systematic, well-defined reinforcement. There's ongoing engagement with both programs. And there's also individualized progress that you can, it's calibrated for all age groups, elementary through adult, and you can actually measure it within each system, which is helpful. And there's also high frequency and immediate feedback for the students. There's been emerging evidence for sustained effect of both of these types of training, but a lot of them haven't been at the same level, like a randomized controlled trial. They've been smaller studies here and there. And currently, a lot of school systems all over the U.S. and in Europe use some of these systems, so it's very important that we really study their efficacy in a scientifically rigorous way. So the first intervention, neurofeedback, it's also called EEG biofeedback, if you're more familiar with that. And our specific program measures beta and theta waves, and so theta waves are more predominant during, like if you're really sleepy, or if you're dreaming, or if you're kind of looking out the window during class when your teacher is talking. And beta waves are more predominant during active thinking, concentration, learning. And you can see the EEG displays of those two brain waves. So the neurofeedback, the EEG sensors detect brainwave activity, and they're actually embedded in a standard bicycle helmet right here on your head. And then the two grounders are in the back right here, and they sit very close to the head. And there's ongoing feedback on how the brain works, how to induce the desired outcome. And there have been recent technological advances that have supported these systems to become more user-friendly, so they're better for us to use in schools as opposed to a private practitioner in practice. It's a little more complicated for them. So this is the menu page, and we do all of these activities: attention, stamina, visual tracking, time on task, short-term memory, discriminatory processing, and academic bridge. And we call them games to the students, but they're not fun and they're not games. So if you were to click on the attention stamina one, that would bring you to this screenshot. And what happens here is you're the orca whale swimming in the ocean and you have your helmet on. So as you become more focused and it's more predominant beta brain waves, the orca swims down to the bottom of the sea and collects coins from a treasure chest, and that's the positive feedback, and you get points. And as you become less focused, it kind of floats back up to the surface, so it's that immediate feedback that the child needs, okay, refocus your brain, and then they can pull it back down. This is actually a picture of me, but so during Academic Bridge, if you were to click on that last one, that would bring you to Academic Bridge. And the reason why we do this is, in the end, we're not training students to be really, really good at our program. We want them to be good learners and better learners and more successful in school. And that's kind of why we have a buy-in with the schools, too. And I understand some of the difficulties you have. So we want to generalize the skills to the classroom. So what happens is they're wearing the helmet and it's measuring their brain waves, but they're actually doing schoolwork. So then they're able to translate that to real work. So the intervention two is cognitive training. And these are more interactive computer tasks. They're not like regular video games. The cognitive exercises programs are designed at, again, training attention with immediate feedback. And with this, it's positive, negative, like you get points or you get positive points. You get points for doing an incorrect or a correct answer, and you lose points for having an incorrect answer. And children progress to higher levels, but the levels are very, very small increments. So for children with ADHD, even a math worksheet can be very overwhelming. So the steps for success are very, very small, so it makes it not such an insurmountable task. And then in this, we also have Academic Bridge, but we don't actually use the computer. We just have them practice their homework, and then we give them feedback. The RA that's working with them, the intervention coach, will say, you know, okay, slow down, take a deep breath, relax your hands, or, you know, so feedback during the homework time. Then here's a cognitive training screenshot. This is just the main menu, and we use a lot of these different modules, attention, skills, developmental, but you can see here how it's very easy to use and feasible in schools. So this is a screenshot of the memory game, and so you match letter number pairs or letter pairs, and then you remember them and put them into this keypad, and then you can unlock the vault and get your prize inside. So our hypotheses are that both neurofeedback and cognitive training will result in improvements in ADHD symptoms compared to the control, and that the improvements in neurofeedback will be superior to those in cognitive training. So our study design, this actually isn't our full study design, but what I'm going to talk about today. So we enrolled 104 students. We do an assessment and randomize them in October, so kind of the beginning of the school year. Then November 1st, we start the intervention with the neurofeedback and cognitive training. And then the weightless control, we just measure. So we did that assessment one, we'll do the assessment two with them, but they don't receive anything during that intervention time point. So then assessment two is 5 months later. And then we also have an assessment three that's actually a six-month follow-up the next school year, but we don't have those results yet. But the reason why we're doing that is we want to see, okay, if we find sustained positive change, is that sustained into the next school year? So we recruited from 19 elementary schools, 15 suburban and 4 urban elementary schools, and all the students were in second or fourth grade, so the weightless control kids then were in, either received the intervention in third or fifth. So we wanted them all to stay in elementary school. Some inclusion criteria, ADHD diagnosis, and we took kids who were both on medication and not. Exclusion criteria, IQ of less than 80, a diagnosis of conduct disorder, autism, or other serious mental illnesses. So the intervention for both treatment groups that we do 45-minute sessions 3 times a week for 40 sessions, and that spans about 5 months. And each child has to do those 40 sessions, and so some kids are absent, and so it takes longer, et cetera. So the scheduling is all in schools, and so it's individualized but challenging because we're not just necessarily during the study hall. It can be during any time, but except for academic instruction, is not affected. So then pre- and post-intervention assessments, these are just 4 that we have. We have other ones as well. The first one is the BOSS, and that's where we have a blind RA that is on our team go in and observe a student in the classroom setting. And she doesn't know the condition of the student, and the student who's being observed doesn't know that that person in the classroom is observing her or him or her. Then the PERMP, which is a measure of attention, and it's a math test. Then the SCAMP is actually a teacher measure of classroom behavior. And then the CONNORS is a parent form of attention at home. So some results. So we enrolled 104 students, and 2 participants actually in the 104 didn't complete the cognitive training intervention. And so one of them switched to a private school, so we couldn't work with her, and the other student, the parents pulled him at the last second. So. And then all other participants received the 40 sessions, and we used the intent to treat model for analysis, at least for groups. And then we haven't noticed yet at least any side effects. So participant demographics, 70% males, which is kind of typical in this population, 72% Caucasian. We were in a primarily suburban school district. 7.6 Hispanic or Latino, 72% suburban, 37% family income of $75,000 or less, and about half were on ADHD medication, and then second and fourth grades. So the results for neurofeedback. So the BOSS is that objective observer, goes into the classroom, and we found big effects, medium to large effect sizes, and they were both significant for engagement. So that's the child is actively engaged in the classroom, so they're taking notes or raising their hand or look like they're actively engaged. Then there's off-task motor verbal, and so that's the child is actually saying or moving when they're not supposed to and, you know, not paying attention. Then we have the PERMP, and that's the math test, and so we have significant improvement in the number correct and number attempted. The SCAMP, the teacher classroom attention score, and that was significantly improved. And then these three core measures of ADHD on the Conners, the executive function, inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity, those were all significantly improved. You can see here how all of the effect sizes are at least medium to large, so that was great. And for cognitive training, it's a slightly different story. We found some effects, but they were definitely not as large. And then weightless control, as we would expect, very small effects, and none of them significant. And so that means we probably had an effective control, which is good. Then if we compare between the randomization groups, we found significant differences between the neurofeedback and the weightless control on some of the Conners parent forms or parent subscales. But we didn't find actually any significant difference between the neurofeedback and the cognitive training, or between then the cognitive training and the weightless control. So summary of results, it's difficult to deliver these sessions, but it definitely is possible, and we've learned a lot over the past 4 years and do think that we could scale up to teaching teachers how to run this in the classroom, either with paraprofessionals in the back of the classroom or with teachers. We found a consistent trend towards improvement in the ADHD symptoms of the neurofeedback group, so that's very promising, but no significant differences between the neurofeedback and cognitive training. So some future directions, we want to look at more moderating and mediating factors like IEP status, IQ, age, see if those play a role. Academic results, so we also did a lot of spelling, reading, writing, and so those are more, we would expect those to change distally. So we haven't analyzed them yet because first the child needs to pay attention before he or she can be better in school. So we're about to analyze those. And that's the results from the long-term follow-up. And then we'd also eventually like to work in middle schools and high schools. We just wrote a grant to work in middle school, so we'll see. So thank you very much. And this is a picture that my PI, her son, made on the computer, so.